Hello, this is Kinch Rendell with Your Business Podcast. Today we have Annette Sloan, mind-body nutrition coach and owner of Wholehearted, which specializes in compassionate health coaching for women and teen girls. I met Annette Sloan back in 2014 in Toastmasters. Annette, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, on this nice snowy day, it's a good reason to be inside recording something.
Oh, I'm so grateful I don't have to go anywhere today.
My just to tell everybody, we live probably, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 miles apart at this point down south of Denver, and I think we got a good foot of snow out there, and it's still snowing. So it's a white December here.
Yep.
Very white. So we met in Toastmasters, so that means Annette can speak really well because she's been practicing with us. So Annette, we just said that you're a mind-body nutrition coach, but what journey, what windy path did you take to get here? What did you study in school? Maybe what did you think you were going to be as a kid? And then how did you end up here?
Yeah, it's definitely been a windy path. You know what? I actually don't remember what I said I wanted to be when I was a kid, which is funny. I was one of those in high school looking at colleges. I had no idea what I wanted to major in. Then I went into college undecided, ended up majoring in communication just because I took a class and I was like, oh, this sounds interesting, I'll do this. But I also was very interested in nutrition. So I began with a nutrition class also my freshman year of college. And in a lot of my extra projects and that kind of thing, I was in that realm of healthy living. I worked at a fitness and weight loss camp for overweight kids the summer after my freshman year, and then I went back 2 more summers because I had so much fun. Ended up writing my college thesis on childhood obesity in the United States, and then after I graduated, I got a job as a wellness teacher at a charter school in Aurora.
So you've been pretty focused in from college, unlike a lot of us who bounce around.
Yes, more or less. The communication degree seems like the random part in all of it.
Yeah, well, that also explains why when you came to Toastmasters, you were rather polished. So there is good teaching that you already – or a good foundation you already had built there when you showed up to and we met you.
Right.
So have you – I'm going to throw in a little tidbit here because I just heard a podcast yesterday from – are you familiar with Shailene Johnson?
No.
Okay, so I was introduced to her via my wife buying the book she wrote called Push. And she was known for quite a while just for workout videos. Well, this all ties back into what you're saying because literally I've heard her in the past, and also this may have been a best of I heard, 2 of her shows yesterday. She spoke about kids and body image and literally had what I thought were great tips, and maybe we'll get into some of these or recommend the same things. She said you should never tell a kid they're fat. Mm-hmm. And yet she hears all these parents and she's seen them going, oh, you shouldn't eat that. Oh, the other girls look prettier, you should put makeup on. Mm-hmm. And it's just gut-wrenching when you realize – parents do those things, and they do say those things, and she was just railing on it. She goes, this is my show, this is my opinion, but literally, people will be going to therapy later in life because of this. She's like, fill in as soon as I stop right here. She goes, if a kid's overweight, they know it. And she then says, kids don't have credit cards, and they don't have cars, and they don't drive to pick up the food. So give me some thoughts in that realm, and let's keep going with that.
Right. Oh, yeah. I totally agree. I think parents should be really careful about saying anything that will shame their kids around their body or around their looks in general or around anything else, academics, talent. And I agree. I talk to people about their relationships with their food and with their body every day. That's what I do, and I hear a lot of these stories. I remember this started when I was 5, and my grandma took me bathing suit shopping, and after I tried on a few bathing suits, she said, maybe we shouldn't get you one because you don't look good in them. You know, things like that. I know. One of my clients has that story. These things stick with people. And often color is a story they carry around for a long, long time until they do the work to shed it. You know, so parents, please be careful. If you have a kid that's overweight or struggling with body image, be really mindful about how you address it.
So let's say I'm just a friend of kids who are overweight. Same things that would apply to me. Are there any ways or things, encouragement that I realize that what parents say stick with us? I mean, my college degrees are exactly what my parents got, not realizing the influence. What's a random thing like somebody that's not involved or not daily with the kid but sees the kid? Is there encouragement basically that you should be giving or that even the parents and I guess anybody else could be giving their kids about, oh, let's work out? Or I don't even think you can even say work out, but what do you recommend? Like, what for the kids do you do?
I would recommend just a family focus on a healthy lifestyle and divorcing it from any look of appearance or any mention of weight, but just saying our family makes healthy choices because we want to feel good. So we like to get out and move our bodies. We like to eat healthy food. We like to cook and get involved in knowing where our food comes from. You know, all of those things that constitute healthy living, but really from the perspective of we want to feel good. We know that we're worthy of feeling good. So that's why we're doing this.
And two things I can relate to there. One is I'm really skinny. So when people see me eating something healthy, they sometimes would make fun of me. And what I realized I would tell them is like, well, I don't eat a lot of pizza. And after seeing in college when I was at Texas Tech, they had test tubes full of what was in a slice of pizza, like fat and salt. I really tried to quit eating pizza. But it's really because of how I felt after I would eat some of that stuff. I would just go, ugh, and feel, ugh. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think – so you just hit on it's we eat healthy because we want to feel good. And that reminded me in Shailene's podcast, she mentioned – you should tell kids that we accept all kinds of body types. We don't all look the same. We would just want to be healthy is what you came back to. I think she hit on the same thing.
Right. And making sure too, it's not an over obsession on being healthy because that's not good for us either. So finding that balance.
Gotcha. Are you talking about being healthy versus not eating enough? Or is that what you're,
more or less, yeah. That's part of my story too. In that, after I got a job as a wellness teacher, and actually starting in high school through college, if I'm really honest, my interest in nutrition and health was coming more from a perspective of I wasn't overweight, but I wanted to lose some weight because I thought I needed to be thinner because, you know, that's what all the hot girls were had perfect bodies, and I wanted to be in that realm as well. So I think I know there are many people that use health as a guide, healthy living as a guide to describe behavior, to justify behavior that's actually may seem good, but is actually not good for them because it's coming from a place of low self-worth.
Yeah, so the feeling good kind of has to come from not my body image, especially not my body image compared to the people, but really, do I feel good? Do I feel probably energetic?
Right.
Maybe in that realm, and I'm drawing a blank after energetic, but maybe not even having headaches and such.
Right.
Literally, I guess there's a lot of different feelings you get from eating foods that are not good for you.
Right. And keeping in mind that it varies very much per person. You know, we think that the nutrition world has it all figured out, and here's the foods you should eat, and here's the foods you shouldn't, but our bodies are all different, and so we all have different nutritional needs. There was actually a study that just came out a few weeks ago that showed that what we thought, you know, a banana will raise someone's blood sugar this much, or a cookie will raise someone's blood sugar this much. We thought that was pretty much, you know, across the board would do the same thing for different people. But the study actually found that some foods that cause a huge increase in blood sugar in some people cause just a tiny blip for other people. So the more research was done, the more we're finding how individualized healthy eating really is.
Well, and that's something else I heard someone speaking, I think it was Ty Lopez, who reads a book a day. He has a podcast. He goes over most of his books. He was talking about how literally, depending on your genetics, if you're an Eskimo, you're obviously not used to eating broccoli and greens as much as you are fish and meat.
Right.
So that makes total sense that sometimes our genetics may. And something else you made me think of is, as we age, like I used to drink a ton of milk. Finally, at some point, maybe 8 years ago, when my wife became pregnant of all weird things, I was lactose intolerant for quite a while.
Hmm.
So I get where you're – not only do we have to know what works for us versus somebody else, also it may change for us.
Right.
I know my mom always said, oh, used to, I could eat anything I wanted. I really at least tell myself, hoping it's true, as long as I stay active, I hope I can keep eating things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I try to be paleo influenced, so I try not to eat as much bread. That's one thing. But like you're saying, unless you get tested, you don't know how it's affecting you.
Right. You can pay attention to how you feel, you know, and that's harder for people. I think we all would rather have an expert tell us, here's what works for you, here's what you should do. But we have so much data just based on, you know, if we really get in touch with our bodies and we can say, we pay attention. This is how I feel right after I eat. This is how I feel an hour later. We can collect quite a lot of information that way.
Yeah. And let's circle back to who do you work with? How do you reach them? How do you interact with them?
Yes, good question. So I work with teen girls and women who are struggling in their relationship with food and body. And it's not full-fledged eating disorders, anorexia and bulimia. But, you know, there's the people in our society that have a healthy relationship with food, and they're on one end of the spectrum. The people who have a totally unhealthy relationship with food, like in the form of an eating disorder, on the other. And most of us, actually about 75% of women in the U.S., are somewhere in the middle. We're struggling in an unhealthy relationship with food in some way because it's perpetuated by our culture. And so the women I work with may struggle with, you know, trying to control too much, like I said, being too focused on healthy eating and then feeling really out of control at some point. So maybe all of that focus on this is what I'm allowed to eat, this is the amount I'm allowed to eat, then results in when life gets tough, binge eating, that sort of thing. That's my story. Or women who have been up and down, you know, tried every diet out there for years and years and found that, you know, they lose weight, then they gain it back. If they lose weight, they gain it back. And they really haven't stopped to look at the emotional and psychological component of their relationship with food. So I help them to look at that and to figure out, you know, what's the root cause underneath the symptom of their unhealthy relationship with food or whatever's happening there. And then we work in those areas. And then with the teens, you know, they haven't had as long to necessarily struggle, but if they're the same situation, you know, if they're looking at food and body in an unhealthy way and it's becoming concerning, then I work with them to help them develop healthy habits that stem from a strong sense of self-worth.
So a strong self-sense worth. So Lily, do you think that most of this begins with women from body image? That's what I'm gathering, is that a lot of this that people you're working with, they want to look like the magazines or look like somebody else.
Maybe, but I think more they just want to feel good. So it's not necessarily that they're striving to look like the models, but they want to, you know, they have a number in mind in terms of how much they want to weigh, maybe that sort of thing. But more often than not, especially with the women after years of struggling in this realm, they're just like, I want to feel confident, I want to feel good in my clothes, you know, but it's not like I need to look like the model.
Okay. But even for the teens, though, that's just wondering what first grabs somebody and makes them, I guess, go down that path. Like, let's hear your story. So you said your story has to do with binge eating.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I should have paused a little longer. So literally, I'm the guy that usually eats only because I get hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even like chocolate. My wife doesn't understand me. My mom doesn't understand me. So I literally am the wacko that I wish I didn't have to eat at all because I'm like, man, this is interrupting whatever I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So explain to me what the binge eating, how does that come about, or what was that for you?
Right. Yeah. So for me, it started, the unhealthy relationship with food started when I was 16. And like I said, I wasn't overweight, but I thought I needed to lose some weight, 10 or 15 pounds, to be super thin. And so I became very interested in healthy eating. But I didn't really know what that meant at that time. I thought it was all about calories. So I began paying really close attention to the number of calories I was eating and restricting them. And then I went to college, and I had this idea in my mind that I was going to be known as the super healthy girl in college because, you know, you kind of have a chance to reinvent yourself, and that's what I wanted to be, because somewhere along this way of thinking, I had equated healthy with virtuous, and so I thought that kind of made me a better person too. So I set really strict rules for myself about what I was and wasn't allowed to eat, and I took a nutrition class, got, you know, learn more. And as I learned more, I just, you know, was very into continuing this image of myself that I wanted to be, and this resulted in feeling deprived. So for physiological reasons as well as emotional reasons, eventually it turned into secretly eating unhealthy foods and then secretly eating huge amounts of unhealthy food and you know, having a binge eating problem.
Huh. Okay. So makes me think of judging. Would you say you judge yourself a lot?
Yes.
You're judging everything you wanted to eat, everything you did eat.
Right.
Does this tie into, would you say you were judging other people to make yourself seem virtuous? Like, oh, look, I didn't eat that, or I'm eating something healthy now?
Yes. And I think that's very common.
So if somebody was going to try to recognize this in their kids, are there telltale signs like that of them at least out in public doing one thing and saying certain things like, oh, look, that's not healthy, and look what I'm eating, this is healthy? Mm-hmm. Or could they watch what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Could a parent notice that?
Parents might notice. I don't know if that – I mean, I think it comes up somewhat with kids and teenagers, but it's more common in adults. I actually think it's very common in adults to sort of look at their plate and look at, you know, how it compares to other people's plates and either feel better about themselves or worse about themselves depending on the matchup of how healthy the food is. So, I mean, the biggest thing parents can do is really watch and heal their own relationship with food if they need to, so that they're setting a positive example for their kids.
Oh, good point you bring up there. My wife yesterday is like, realize the kids are learning from you everything you do. Don't you want to be a better parent? I'm like, of course I want to be a better parent. But it comes back to you're always modeling things for your kids is what I believe you just said.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you're doing that you really don't want them to do, you better just stop doing it.
Right. Especially the mother-daughter component. You know, if mom's saying like, oh, I'm bad because I ate a piece of cake, or looking in the mirror and saying that she's fat, daughters are going to poke that stuff up. And it becomes inherent in the way they talk to themselves as well.
Wow. Yeah, and that's – so coming back to this, since I just heard Shailene Johnson yesterday, she literally with her kids, she goes – she always says positive things she says about herself, and she goes, I'm not bragging about me. I realize I'm modeling for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes as far to say, you're never going to meet somebody as smart and funny as your mom, or something to that arena, something just kind of out there, and you'd think, oh, she really is full of herself. She goes, I'm really not full of myself, but I know once again I'm modeling for my kids, so I need to be positive. She goes, she feels like she was blessed because her parents just treated her like she was smart and she was going to be good, although I don't really think she still kids are smart, but they worked hard at it.
Mm-hmm.
She said so many people don't come from that background where they don't have the great modeling.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where hopefully for us parents we can think, oh, yeah, what are our kids doing? And more so, what are we showing our kids? As
right.
You said, oh, I'm bad for eating that. No, you did something you don't approve of at that minute, but in reality, that doesn't make you bad.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest myths that I like to talk about and write about is the myth of good foods and bad foods, because it's so common to hear people say, I was good, I had a salad, I was bad, I ate ice cream. Really, you know, in those statements, we're attaching our self-worth to what we eat, and there's no correlation.
Yeah.
And then it just brings up, it puts so much negative energy, so much judgment. Kids pick that up, so on and so forth.
That's where I look back. When I was in college, basically, I think college was, yes, I learned some things, but really I played basketball 3 or 4 hours a day. And at one point, I worked at a private restaurant in Lubbock called the Lubbock Club.
Hmm.
And they had made their fresh pies, cakes, you name it. I would go in and they'd let you eat stuff. I'd eat half a cheesecake. And people would freak out like, man, how are you so skinny? How do you do all that? But if you play a sport for 3 or 4 hours a day, I realize, yeah, maybe that stuff isn't the best for you, but it didn't make me feel bad. And I was probably burning so many calories. So as you said, maybe somebody ate ice cream, but if they burned it all off already, or as one study I just heard about, if you work out right after you eat something, it keeps your blood sugar and some people from spiking. So it's almost like it's not that negative effect.
Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily, the idea of calories in, calories out is also kind of an outdated concept that we tend to still believe, because we now know there's so many factors that affect how our bodies will metabolize our food, that it's not just I took in 200 calories, I burned 200 calories. And also in what you're saying, I hear a little bit of what our society thinks of a lot, which is it's okay as long as I'm maintaining my weight or, you know, having this equilibrium. But it doesn't matter. I mean, the self-worth piece doesn't matter. You could be 200 pounds, 500 pounds, and it doesn't mean you're any less worthy as a human being.
Exactly. But what's crazy is even me being thin, I sit there and I judge what I'm eating. So literally with the paleo stuff, I'm like, oh, I should eat less carbs. Well, I don't really know. I've not been tested. I've listened to some podcasts where people say, hey, go get these labs done, and we'll tell you if you're deficient in something or – so that made sense to me that, hey, we're going to test just for you, find out what you're doing, and look at you and your health.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas me, I'm just going, oh, I shouldn't eat as much bread.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in reality, who knows? Maybe it isn't bad for me. I'm obviously not – I don't have gluten issues. But it's interesting that society has gotten to me, or just what I've heard, I've accepted as true, may not be true for me.
Right, right.
And the self-worth, you're exactly right. It doesn't, there, we should not correlate those two together. We shouldn't say, oh, one's equal to the other.
Right. Yeah, I think it's you know, being mindful of our language around that is really important, you know.
And you mentioned the studies on people. So that's where people are like, you should just eat more. And I'm like, I used to eat a ton, and sometimes I still do. I just don't gain weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize if I work out, I will gain some weight. So in college, I could put on 5 or 10 pounds by working out a lot. But in reality, some of us, we have what people all think they want to have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some people think they're too thin. So in college, oh, I should gain some weight. Well, it's not so easy. Or finally, I got comfy going, okay, I'm a thin guy. That's fine. It doesn't really matter mm-hmm. in the big scheme of things. And I bring up to people that even people like Sean Bradley, they had him eating like 12,000 calories a day, the really tall basketball player back in the day. Mm-hmm. He couldn't gain any weight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so interesting how, yeah, some people think that's a blessing, and those of us that are skinny usually think it's a curse.
Right.
But you're right. What I eat and what you eat, we could eat the same thing and probably do the same workouts, and who knows how that affects each of us.
Right, right. And I think sometimes people on your end of the spectrum have it harder because everybody thinks they have it made. So it's hard to say, I'm struggling. I have a friend right now who went through a period of a lot of stress, and when she's really stressed, she doesn't eat. She lost a lot of weight. And now she's like, I'm too skinny. And everybody's always telling me I'm too skinny. I'm trying to gain weight, you know, but it's just really hard for her, for people to, because people don't get it. They're like, that's not a problem. You're thin. That's great. You know, so it's harder to get sympathy or empathy in that situation.
Oh, true. I can tell you. So my wife, and I think I'm thinner than her, probably on an index scale. Maybe not, babe. Hey, you're perfect. You're perfect as you are. But literally, I will hear her sister-in-law say, oh, you're too thin. Oh, especially when she's pregnant, you need to gain some weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell people not to tell skinny people that. It's not going to help them, I guess. Maybe even if they really needed help once again, someone that's underweight, it doesn't do good, I wouldn't think, to point that out. Maybe you have some other thoughts there, though. If somebody is anorexic, I'm sure you would tell them to get help, but I doubt you would tell me to go try to help them, not being a doctor.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And also for somebody that's anorexic, for somebody to say, hey, you're too skinny, that's what they're going for. They're going to take that as a compliment and as validation to continue doing what they're doing.
Oh, great point.
So, yeah.
Great.
We don't want that.
You reinforce what they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Ay, ay, ay. Mm-hmm. Whereas people like me, I'm not trying to be skinnier, not at all. But yeah, people, oh, you're too thin. Okay, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
And that's where I feel like people really would expect me to go out there and eat lots of junk food.
Right.
And I'm just like, and it comes back to I learned at some point that doesn't make me feel good.
Exactly.
And I even thought yesterday I was eating something I thought I should admit to you. But I'm going to go back to college. So once again, in college, I was really active. I remember walking to class a lot of days. I'd get a Dr. Pepper and a Snickers bar and eat that. Today, I've realized at this point, I tried 10 years ago or so, I can no longer do that. I just know how it makes me feel, and that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So something else I'd warn people, what may have worked then? Oh, I got a random one for you. Are liquid calories as bad for at least some of us as I think they are? I read something years ago saying drinking soda water, like a can of Coke, a 12-ounce can a day, is 13 pounds of calories in a year.
Hmm. I haven't done the math on that, but I would believe it. I like to – the bigger thing with soda is just all the – you know, all the unnatural stuff that's in it. And the fact that we don't tend to feel that we consume the calories, but they don't make us feel full. So we're not giving our bodies the signals that we've actually consumed 100 calories or whatever it is. And it just messes with our, you know, our satiation system.
And that, something else I'm tying into is our DNA is quite old and evolves very slowly. So 1,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago, any liquid we were drinking was pretty much calorie-free, I take it.
Yes, I would assume. Milk, maybe.
So that it just makes sense from what you're saying. Unless you're a baby getting milk or you started milking cows, if you're drinking a liquid, your body's not equating that with calories.
Yes, your body's not feeling like, you know, that sense of fullness that you would get if you were eating.
Ah, okay. Yeah, definitely feel free to throw out any little tips like that possible, anything that people can take as a nugget and work with.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I would also – oh, go ahead.
No, no, go, go.
I would also just say, you know, be careful about the way you talk to yourself along that journey. I wouldn't want anybody to think, okay, so I have to stop drinking soda because soda's bad and I'm bad if I drink soda, you know, to go back to the things that we've been saying. Just to go to it from the perspective of I want to feel better. So I'm going to work on cutting this out so I can, you know, see how that makes me feel.
Yeah, exactly. I love cycling it back to, especially I would tell people, if you've been telling yourself you're bad for doing something for years and years, it probably hasn't worked, right?
Right.
So give up on that. It's not healthy for you either, mentally, emotionally, and such.
Mm-hmm.
So try this new approach. How do you really feel? And that's why I can tell people when I went ahead and did cut out a lot of the carbs, at first when I went almost overboard on paleo, going, I'm not going to have carbs for at least in the morning for breakfast, I would have eggs, let's say bacon. And what I realized was it took me several weeks to get past the point of not being hungry in an hour.
Mm.
Almost like I had my body was built, I was so used to having carbs that it craved them and it wasn't accepting that I was eating something else and I should be, at least in my mind, not hungry for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But then once I kind of cut way back on the carbs, I'd noticed if I went off and ate two pieces of pizza or three or four, which once again, I try to avoid, I don't order pizza, I don't, but I have kids. So I'll end up eating pizza and literally be like, oh, I just feel like I should go to sleep.
Mm. Yeah.
It comes back. I think you're right. It's the feelings that really is what I try to clue into, not so much I'm bad. Although in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, I shouldn't eat this stuff. That's bad for you. And I don't know if it's bad for me. Maybe I don't metabolize it like that.
Right, right. Well, look at, you know, Warren Buffett. He eats at McDonald's every day, and he has since he was in his 20s. And he seems to be doing pretty well in good health, you know, very successful.
Yeah. Hey, and there was a lady I read in the past couple of years. She's about 104, and her claim to fame was bacon every single day.
Right.
I was like, yeah, let's have some bacon. So let's get into the meat. So nutrition and the media, what are we getting information-wise from them? Right track, wrong track, good information?
I think that what the media is telling us is only half the story, because it assumes, you know, with all the nutrition messages, even though we are studying nutrition and we know more about it than we ever have, the assumption with based on all the information they're telling us is that if we get the information, eat this, don't eat this, that we will implement and follow that information. And what it's not taking into account is the whole mind-body piece around the fact that we are emotional beings. We're very complicated, you know, we're messy. We have all these different things going on in our in who we are. So it's not as simple as knowing what to do and then doing it. And so we need to, I think the mainstream nutrition world is actually failing us in that way, because it makes us feel bad about ourselves if we don't just follow the rules of eat this, okay, I can follow that rule and done. You know, it's much more complicated than that.
Exactly. At the very at least physical level, and then I really want to get back into the mind-body connection. At the physical level, if you cut out what you're eating but you work out less, I would say there's equations there you can at least start with, but just eating less, then you might do less. You didn't do anything, I guess. It's not going to help you.
Right.
So back to the mind-body piece. So something I thought of earlier. So I'm thin, but my dad was always overweight. And I'd read some stuff where literally I was wondering how much is stress and other things that I've read about, can that influence? Like how do you approach that area, the mind body? And are there certain stressors that are causing people that you see to have challenges with weight?
Absolutely. When we eat in a stress response, our bodies will digest, metabolize, and assimilate the nutrients from the food much less efficiently. So one of the big things that I work with people on is eating mindfully, taking the time to sit down with their food, not do anything else, not write emails at work or watch TV or anything like that, and just really be present with it. Because when we do that, we tell our bodies, our brains are present for the act of eating. So our bodies get the message, hey, all there is to do right now is take in the food and digest and metabolize and take the nutrients from it. Whereas if our brains are off doing something else, our bodies are going to send resources to whatever that is, and we're not going to have as much energy left to take in the nutrients from the food. Which means that we will be more likely to hold on to it as fat instead of burn it off as energy. And there's some fascinating studies that support this, actually, if you want to hear more.
Oh, yeah, that, and I want to grab links from you. I'll put in the show notes as well. So, and let me just recap. So you're saying if we're stressed out, And maybe just, especially if we're stressed out while we're eating, our body is more likely to store that. Because if we're stressed, we may not survive, so therefore we better, or maybe we won't get more food, our body's thinking. So we should store away as much of this as possible.
Exactly. Yeah. Our bodies are smart, and like you said, we've evolved very slowly. So, you know, back in the caveman days, if we were stressed, it was probably, well, if it was like a major level of stress, you know, maybe it was a life or death situation, being chased by an angry gorilla or something like that. You know, fight or flight. All the blood goes to our legs and our arms so we can flee or run, and to our head so we can think quickly in that situation. In that situation, you know, it's not like, oh, your body's, I'm going to digest the food right now while you have to run from this angry gorilla. It knows how to prioritize.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a more moderate level of stress back in those days very well might have been, I'm not finding enough food to store away for the winter, and I'm worried about being able to make it through. So my body's going to release cortisol and insulin, hormones that specialize in fat storage, to help me out and to give me a little extra energy and padding on my body so I can make it through. We still work that way.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. So I've been trying to do a book a week at a minimum, especially by 2016 was my goal, read a book a week. And I also listen to things. And that's what I keep hearing is lately, I want to say it's Ty Lopez, keeps hitting on, our DNA is not involved much. It's not evolved. It's not evolved.
Mm-hmm.
So think back. What was it doing? Yeah, there's something. Oh, I noticed that there's not a lot of food to eat, so I'm stressed because I know winter's coming.
Right.
So it's just, so for us in this age, you would work with people once again to be mindful, to pay attention while they're eating, to focus that they're eating. I would even go to so far as to think, when, especially if I'm eating a salad or something, I think, oh, this is so healthy for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this is good. Okay. I'm being, so I guess I'm doing a good act. It's not making me a better person per se, but I'm trying to acknowledge that, yes, I'm enjoying this. I'm glad, let's say if I'm eating chicken, I'm even grateful and thankful that I have the food, I guess I go so far as to think at times.
Yes. Yeah. And when I bring people through a mindful eating practice, I start with taking a few deep breaths and thinking about where the food came from. So we get that connection with, wow, this came from the earth, and there were all these steps to get it from there to me. And I'm so grateful that I have nourishing food to feed myself. I mean, that puts our body in a relaxation response as well, which just really helps with, I mean, one, it feels good to be so grateful. But then it also sets our body up to digest, metabolize, and assimilate nutrients more efficiently.
Yeah, and that ties back into something I've talked about and read a lot about from James Altucher to anybody you listen to, is being grateful. This morning, I actually remembered, oh, yeah, what am I grateful for? Think of all the random things I'm grateful for. And it makes sense to apply it to your food as well. And I can tell you, this summer was the first time I raised meat chickens to eat.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid, I did this, but as a kid, I never wanted to eat my chickens, and somebody that took them was going to keep them, right? Yeah. Okay. So literally, I now know the process, and it makes me look at food a little bit differently because I went through the full process. I have frozen chickens in the freezer,
mm-hmm.
and I know where they came from, and I know the process. So that's, I'd even challenge people to go out there and try to find local farmers, local homesteaders, and really see and get involved if you can. I think it is healthier when you, at least from what I've heard, when your food comes from a more local place.
Oh.
Those microbes and everything that they ate and were around, even the honey. So I got honey from my neighbor the other day.
Yeah.
It has the local pollen in it. So that's a weird thing. I doubt you can convince everybody, but at least if they know about it, they can at least think, oh, yeah, this is healthy too. I'm doing a good thing here.
Right. Absolutely. And healthier for the economy, you know, it's just, I'm a big proponent for local food, so I couldn't agree more.
Oh, good. Let me know if you want to start something. There's actually supposed to build a church over here in our neighborhood. It's like, I forget if it's 12 acres or 9 acres, but it was about $500,000. And I kept thinking, how could I ever make that into a little farm for everybody local to come to?
Mm.
I didn't have enough money to make that happen. I really couldn't make it in my mind. Like, how much do you have to pay a mortgage on that? Mm-hmm. But if the church goes under, if it doesn't happen, I'm still dreaming. Because in this county, I think it's the highest per capita income county. So I do plan to do a whole bunch more chickens this next year. Cause I'm pretty sure, just like I've seen work other places, that people will be willing to have grass or chickens raised out on the grass. And they really do care. They'd like to come and see and know where their food's coming from.
Oh, yes. I agree. I get. I actually was a vegetarian for many years, but I've started eating meat again in the last, I don't know, 6 months or a year. But we get our meat from a friend who, it's all local, it's all really good quality, and I think there'd be a huge demand. And if you have that, I'd buy chickens from you and eggs from you. I'd love that.
Oh, yeah. And so the eggs have slowed down because obviously it's snowing, and they well, I do have heat lamps, they're okay.
Right.
What did you make me think of? Oh, talking about even how animals are treated, that's the other thing, is people go and see, like truly see where, if you have a cage-free egg place around you, go see if those chickens actually go outside.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a guy down south of us here near Black Forest, I meant to order meat from him, and I haven't yet. He will not take his hogs or his cows to the butcher until they are calm getting in the trailer. He can hug them. So he goes to the point that the animals better be not only healthy, they better be stress-free.
Mm.
And that's just a connection that most of us can never even thought of. And I'm like, wow, that's who I want to buy meat from for the freezer.
Oh, my gosh.
It's somebody like that.
I love that.
It literally goes that far. Yeah, his frequently asked questions say, well, if you don't have your meat yet, it's because until the animals are, until I can do this, that, and the other. And I talk to him. It's just amazing that there are people that care to that level.
Mm-hmm.
How much does it help you? Well, it might, once again, you'll be more mindful of what you're eating,
mm-hmm.
where it came from.
Right. I'm assuming you've read Joel Salatin.
Yeah. So, and that's basically Joel Salatin is a mentor just by reading. I would tell everybody, read. You're getting mentors from books. So that's who I'm copying for the pastured poultry, literally.
Mm-hmm.
I read his book. I've listened to hours and hours of him.
Mm-hmm.
Online, on YouTube and such, you can watch him or listen to him. So that's exactly one of the models. I met some guys last year from California, from Primal Pastures, who basically copied the same model.
Mm, that's wonderful.
Now they bring in meat from different people that are doing it correctly, but they're raising the chickens.
Yeah.
So
that's wonderful.
Anybody has questions on that, check out Joel Salatin, Polyface Farms. He's pretty famous at this point.
Right. Yeah.
Can you think of any more things on the media about wrong tracks or like when they change the food pyramid just randomly throughout the years?
Well, when I was a wellness teacher, I used to teach the food pyramid. Well, not the pyramid version because it was then like a plate. But now, you know, the message I give is just, let's look at, if you're not feeling good, we can look at your macronutrient balance. We can look at the quality of food you're eating, that sort of thing. But again, it's very individualized. So really encouraging people to get in touch with their bodies. But the other thing about the media and what they're telling us about nutrition is this whole idea of willpower is the assumption that healthy eating is all about willpower. And, you know, you have to sort of force yourself to make the choice to pick the healthier food. I disagree with that. I think it's a myth. I think it's an unhealthy idea that we're putting out in the world. Because it assumes, the very idea assumes that healthy eating will always be hard and it will always be about force and deprivation. And that's not true. You know, if you get to the place where you're eating healthy because you want to, because it makes you feel good and because you enjoy nourishing yourself with good food, then it's not hard. And that's the goal. The goal is to get everybody to that place instead of have them believe that they have to just use willpower and food has to be a battle for their whole life.
Oh, so that brings up exactly what I've heard Wayne Dyer say, in the fact of people assume things are going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
So watch how you do talk to yourself, because something may be hard and it may be easy.
Right.
Until you do it, you don't know.
Right.
Until you accomplished it. And I would say if something seems hard along the journey, well, maybe there's something you're going to learn there that you're going to share with other people to make it easier for them, or to let them know that it's worth it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So like you're saying, so the message is, oh, you've got to have the willpower. You're a weak person. You don't have the willpower to accomplish this.
Right, right. And that was what I believed for many years when I was struggling with food, is that I didn't have the willpower. You know, I was binge eating because I just wasn't strong enough, and I would beat myself up like crazy. Crazy shame spiral, crazy self-loathing, and that never helped me get better, even though I thought it would. I thought if I were harder on myself, that's what I needed, a good kick in the pants. To improve, but finally I realized that's not the root. It's about self-compassion. It's about accepting where you are, recognizing that there's good reasons underneath the struggle that you have with food, figuring out what those are, working on doing the personal work to work on those. And then came healing. You know, that's the path. It's about loving ourselves more, having more self-compassion, believing that we're worthy, beating ourselves up doesn't get us anywhere.
Yeah, especially I would tell people, once again, how do you feel about it? Has it worked? If it hasn't worked for you, then change course. Try something new.
Right.
Whereas, yeah, one path may be hard and may have been trying it for years or decades. Well, pick another path. And So tell me, is that where I can imagine, I keep hearing this also from what I'm reading and listening to, is having coaching, having accountability partners, but basically having somebody else to help you along the way. Obviously, that's where you come in with people.
Mm-hmm.
You would probably say, what was your path? Did you have some coaches? What path really helped you?
That's a great question. And the answer is kind of funny because I am healing my own relationship with food. I never actually – I saw a therapist for a few sessions. I didn't really connect with her, so I didn't pursue that path. I would say my own journey was more about just looking – finally realizing that what I was doing wasn't working, coming across resources that helped me to look at my relationship with food in an entirely different way. My practice of yoga, and when I did yoga teacher training a couple years ago, really helped because I was in this environment. You know, you learn in yoga teacher training, you learn a lot about the physical practice, but there's so much inner work and personal development that goes on. And that was where I first found the courage to tell the other women in my group that I had struggled with food, which was a secret. I hadn't really told anyone up to that point. And that, you know, shining a light on my shame created room for so much healing. And then over the past couple years, it's turned into sharing my story in a wider sense. After I left my school, I had a job where I was helping to implement a curriculum about nutrition in the food system in Colorado high schools, but that was short-lived. They ran out of funding for my position, so I was in a place of, okay, so what am I going to do next? Never thought I was going to be an entrepreneur, didn't even really know what coaching was, but as I was exploring my options and doing a lot of soul searching, I ended up deciding on the path that I'm on now, and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I tell people, once again, sharing your story, that's what you're doing, and that's what other people should do as well. That's what evidently sounds like it really helped you as well, once you could come to grips and actually admit to people or speak about your challenges. It seems like once you were more open to, okay, step one, yeah, I have this challenge,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to admit that to people or talk about it, that probably opened up some doors for you.
Definitely, definitely. Well, it creates space when you share something that you feel a lot of shame around, and it's accepted with love and compassion and without judgment. The amount of healing that comes just in that in itself is profound.
Good point. And randomly, I think it was yesterday once again. Lots happened yesterday. I was like, man, maybe I should go take yoga. I was reading the book that I just finished called The Mindful Athlete. And George Mumford worked with Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Phil Jackson, Kobe Bryant. He's currently working with the Knicks and lots of other people. And he comes back to this whole mind-body connection. He talks about yoga. I want to say Tai Chi. Literally, a lot of it coming back to your mind, even as an athlete, to get in the flow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the book really – I think you should have put it out to the world, not to athletes per se, because so much of it can apply to general life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's once again tying into what you're saying, that you went and started doing yoga and had some profound experiences there, or at least it opened you up more to start the healing, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah. Just the process of self-acceptance and self-compassion that – comes with yoga was a big part of my healing for sure.
Self-acceptance. I'm taking notes, although we'll go back and take even more. Those are good points. Very good points. So have we covered the main message about health eating these days? Do you have any more you can think on that realm?
Let's see. We talked about the myths of willpower and good and bad food. Those are two of my main things. And then the big vision for my work is a world in which all women and girls believe that they're worthy exactly as they are. And I'm driven by the idea of a world in which we don't spend all this wasted energy worrying about food and body. And instead, we're applying that energy to whatever we're excited about, whatever we're passionate about, whatever work we're meant to do in the world. So that's the main driver of it all, is we're worthy as we are. And I hope we can come to a place where we're all accepting of that.
So let me put a little firework in my head. So I probably can't even relate being a guy that doesn't think about weight and everything else. How much time does somebody, a woman that's caught up in this, let's say, or focused on this, spending focusing on this? Is it hours of a day? Is it an hour of a day? Is it 5 minutes of an hour? What?
Yeah, I ask that question when I'm talking to potential clients. What percentage of your mental energy would you guess you spend thinking about food and body? when I was struggling, I would guess it was at least 50%. I've gotten answers as high as 80%. So it's like, it's a constant, it's always in the back of your mind. You're thinking about what you're about to eat, you know, how much it's going to be, what you really want to be eating instead of that. And then when it's not eating time, even if you're working or doing other things, there's something in the back of your mind. When am I going to eat again? What am I going to have? Is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? You know, if you're caught up in that way of thinking, it can really take over.
So you probably notice everything that's food-related or body image-related, from smelling food to all the commercials to watching somebody walk by with a Coke.
Right. Yep. You do, because you're very focused. You know, it makes sense when you think about it, especially if people are restricting calories. Like, of course, if we're hungry on some level, kind of always, then it makes sense that our minds are going to make us think about food all the time.
Yeah, because you're thinking, I'm not, and even if you're not eating, let's say, nutritious as you should, you're like, your body's craving things.
Exactly. So your body will drive you to eat more of anything, just in hopes it'll get the nutrients it needs.
And someone might be thinking, oh, chocolate's going to fulfill all this. I need some of that fat. Okay, I need some fat, so I'm going to eat chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, and that's an oddball. I want to come back to the media, but literally, I'd be like, I know that I read something saying you need X grams of fat per day and that your brain needs fat to operate correctly.
Right.
And then I'd be like seeing people try to cut out all the fat, and I'm like, no. Once again, I probably should never say anything, but I'm thinking, no, it's good to eat fat. Eat avocados. Eat something that you think is healthy that has fat all in it.
Absolutely. Yep.
So with the meat.
Oh, go ahead.
So do you recommend with people? So I realize I can focus on something, and it's as simple as an example I have of my racing number would be 11. And I remember I always start noticing 11s, either on the side of the freeway, or I'll notice if it's 11, 11 o'clock, or 1:11. I really realized, okay, whatever I focus on, and lately was looking at a certain used car to buy, then noticing them all.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine women that are thinking about this stuff all the time, it builds upon itself up to a point of, let's say, 50 or 80% of your time you're thinking. Do you recommend like them not to watch media or cut out media, cut out magazines?
Yeah.
Because I imagine they're getting bombarded by this all the time.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a very healthy step, is to look at their social media feed is a huge one. Who are you following? What messages are they giving? And because otherwise, you know, if you're looking at that every day, that stuff is getting ingrained in your mind. And then also really recognizing the magazines and the other stuff that you're consuming. Being educated, you know, having that sense of media literacy, how much are these photos, how much are they Photoshopped or how much are they changed?
Oh, yeah.
I went with my teenagers, you know, there's an awesome TED Talk by a model named Cameron Russell, and she's one of the most watched TED Talks of all time. It's called...
I've seen it.
Yeah, Looks on Everything. Believe me, I'm a model. So, you know,
yeah.
I people tend to know about this, but I also, if needed, I go into that. Just let's remind ourselves of the extent to which these notions of beauty all around us are physically unattainable in most cases.
And they're being pushed by somebody in media for some reason we don't even – yeah, they're trying to make money somehow or get your attention somehow.
Right.
And, yes, of course, I have Instagram accounts and we post lots of stuff there trying to get a big following. But literally I didn't even realize, yes, there's TV and there's reading – but now people at work, every 10, 15, 20 minutes, they can be checking these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to tell people, you're always taking in information. For me personally, a couple of years ago, I realized, wow, I'm spending an hour or 2 hours a day reading about economic and political things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is not good. It's building upon itself. I'm thinking everything is terrible and bad. And finally, I said, okay, and this is where Joel Selton probably came in. I said, okay, how am I going to cut this out? And my deal was, I said, no longer am I going to those sites. I said, instead, I still have my phone, but I'm going to YouTube and I'm typing in something. In this case, it was about permaculture farming or something I wanted to learn about. So that was the only way I could switch from, okay, I'm still spending time reading or learning, but I finally realized it's not positive. So I imagine there's got to be positive things out there. Maybe you link to them on your website and blog and such. But for us to just challenge ourselves to say, hey, this is what I usually look at, but I'm not going to do that now. I'm going to go find something positive.
Exactly. Yeah, I think you're exactly right that it's easier. You make it easier on yourself that way instead of just cutting it out. But there's plenty of positive stuff out there. It's just, you know, switching your focus to be there, have your mindset there instead of in all the negative stuff.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the mainstream media has so little of positive. I still check some things, but I also now take it all with a grain of salt, realizing they're trying to get their message across. They're trying to, it's a negative type website, one I go to. I realize they're trying to get your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, because of evolution, we pay attention to the things that might kill us or that are negative.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what the media sells all day long?
Right.
The negative. So literally, so you would, yeah, it's, if you're thinking 50 to 80% about this, yeah, I guess you really have to start changing your focus, I would say. How do you start focusing on something else so that finally fades away more and more into the background?
Right. So I think that's one step.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that does it for, that's everything, but I think that's a big part of it.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, no, you know, I like the body, mind, the acceptance. That all makes even more sense. I just wonder. For me personally, since I cut cable 3 or 4 years ago now and then finally caught myself wasting all this time reading stuff that wasn't inapplicable to my life, like it wasn't going to change anything except for make me more scared or negative. So,
mm-hmm.
So with your own business, what's the process? What have you learned? When did this begin for you to have your own business?
It began about 18 months ago, so it's still pretty new. I have learned so much. Being a business owner and an entrepreneur is absolutely the biggest personal development exercise I think there is. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's plenty of big things, but it's a big one. I've learned a ton about myself. I have made a lot of strides in development spiritually as well, because, you know, you take a leap of faith to do something like this, and that has been a big part of it too.
Yeah, and is your husband, is it supportive? Is that a big part that enables you to do some of this? Did it make it easier, let's say, or not easier? Did you get buy-in right away? Did you not get buy-in?
Oh, he's wonderful. He supported me. You know, really when I was trying to figure out everything that my next steps back in February of 2014 when my last job ended, he absolutely supported me and ended up going down this path. And I'm so grateful to have him. One, you know, he's paying the bills as the business gets up and starting to make a little money for himself, but I'm grateful that I have the lights on and food to eat while it's building. And then just the emotional support and the pep talks he gives me when I'm feeling down. And another person who's been wonderful is Rainey, who you've had on the show before and who's also in Toastmasters. She's the one who, when I was really at that tipping point where to go, I talked with Rainey, and I said, here's the path, you know, finding a job that feels safer, and here's the other path of starting a business, and it scares me. And she said, she told me to do the thing that scared me. And I was like, okay. I mean, I really kind of made the decision to start the business that day.
And I go back and forth. I hear from people, and I always tell people, find a passion that doesn't seem like work and live it.
Mm-hmm.
Make it your job if possible.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like you found something you're very passionate about, and you're in the process of making it a bigger and bigger company or able to affect more and more people,
right,
which seems like a really driving force, as you said. You really plan to help lots of people.
I do. I have a big vision for what I want to do. I was just talking with a friend yesterday who's in the very beginning stages of forming a coaching business. And she was sharing with me, she's like, I have daily fantasies about being on, you know, talking to Oprah in the forest. And she does it for her Super Soul Sunday show. And I was like, oh, yeah, I have those too. You know? And
yeah.
Go ahead.
So you have dreams and hopes that are big enough to scare you that seem probably impossible at some level.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to state that again for everybody listening. I've read that as well. You need to have the big ones that are scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I excel there at times. I'm like, oh, I plan to do this and do that, and I have all these things going on. But, yeah, it's just go ahead and put the dream out there, the goal out there, write it down. Do you have any tips on that regard? Do you write down? What is your personal way to track these things? Do you write them down? Do you have somebody that keeps you accountable? Is it your husband? Is it somebody else?
I do. I have a business accountability partner. She's also a health coach.
Nice.
We talk every Monday morning and share, you know, here's what I accomplished last week, here's what I'm planning to do this week, and then we have to report back. And I also belong to a club called 3 to 5 Club, which I joined a few months ago, and the idea is that it helps you to build a mature business in 3 to 5 years. And that's been wonderful so far because the people in it are pretty much all a few steps ahead of me, which was part of my purpose in joining, to put myself among people yep. who I could learn from. So those things have been really, really helpful.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Is that 3 to 5 club online or is it local?
It's local.
Huh, I wonder if there's more of those all around. So that's where so often I've heard recently as well, have an accountability partner.
Mm-hmm.
Find a way to do that. And I'm still slacking in some regards because mine is rather occupied with what he's doing right now. But literally have somebody that you can learn from, like you're saying, a group. And I always lately have been realizing, wow, I need to go hang out with more people that know more, that have more experiences, which luckily I realize you have different experiences than me. So meeting up with you or meeting up with anybody, Rainey, talking to these different people, I can learn things. I can share things.
Right.
It just seems to really help. Like you're saying, you got into a group where they're steps ahead of you and they can really help you get there quicker.
Yeah.
And I'm glad also you said 3 to 5 years, not 3 to 5 months.
Oh, my gosh. I know. When I started, I had completely unrealistic expectations of how quickly I could grow. And now I realize, yeah, it takes time.
And that's where my little personal story goes. Three of us started Riptide Hosting, web hosting company, back in 2002. And I'm not sure if we paid a single penny out of any of the proceeds or profits for 5 to 7 years.
Mm.
It was a side business. So I tell people that they think they want either what I have or what somebody else has, free time or just have a business. If you have a full-time job and you really don't feel like you can quit it, then start something on the side.
Right.
Now, I wish I would have made it go faster, and knowing what I do now, like once again, if somebody's talking to me, could I help them make it quicker? Yes. But it can take time. And 3 to 5 years is a great time frame. You might end up doing it in the next year.
Right.
But at least now you realize, oh, yeah, this takes a while to build up things, and what all can I do to get there? And
absolutely, yeah. So that's been just amazing. And the support of the people, too. It's not only accountability, but it's like wholehearted, people got your back. It's a place to say, you know, I don't know, I'm really stuck, you know, whatever it is, and people are there for you, which is, when it's just you in a business, it's hard to find that sometimes.
Oh, sure. And that's where I also tell people, for me, I had two other partners. And I've been most successful anytime I have a partner in something. I've got a 4x8-foot whiteboard behind me with all these ideas and things I'm working on. And that's where I want more partners, honestly, for so many things. And I think people probably think I'm full of when I meet them and I found out they're into something I'm into, I go, hey, we should do this.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably think this guy is wacko. He would never partner up with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I've realized, no, for me personally, I'm a great starter. But it doesn't mean I'm going to finish things. But when I had partners to begin the business, I was accountable to them. Oh, I'll do that. They'll be like, have you done that? So I would encourage, like you found out, if you're by yourself, you need to have somebody else. And in your case, you have an accountability partner. Once a week, it sounds like you have a call.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also now have a whole group that you can tie into and learn from.
Right. Yeah. So
that's great advice for anybody that is starting their business to help and be realistic about, oh, I'll have this done in 2 years.
Right.
I'll have associates working for me, give them a message. Yeah, have you thought about that? How would you duplicate yourself? Do you plan to duplicate yourself?
Right. I'm still figuring that out. That's part of the 3 to 5 club model, is that you build a business that gives you time, money, and significance so that it can, you know, when you're done, it can run by itself, or, you know, you can step away from it and you'll still be making money from it. And for me, that's what,
exactly.
You know, I'm like, okay, well, at this point, I'm still very, attached to all the things that I do and the connecting with people. And I'm slowly starting to, you know, give up some things. And I have a virtual assistant that helps me with a few things, which is wonderful. But I am trying to start to figure out, you know, down the line, would I want to hire other coaches or train them? Maybe. You know, I have a vision of an online program that I could run, maybe for women and emotional eating, that kind of thing, or maybe for teens, because I'm pretty sure there's stuff like that for women out there, but for teens, I don't think there is yet. Maybe it's more personal development focused, because really, even though the window of what I do is the food and body stuff, it's most, you know, it's working on self, and it's those inner issues that we're figuring out. So anyway, so I have some different thoughts and ideas in that realm, but I haven't figured it all out yet.
Yeah. And that's where one simple thing I can tell you I learned at the Thrive Las Vegas conference earlier this year was to duplicate yourself, she said, like you were saying, online classes.
Mm-hmm.
You record yourself. You put out tidbits on YouTube. You then have a whole class where it's video. Shailene Johnson said the same thing. She was working, making all these workout videos, doing infomercials. And she goes, you know what? I want to be able to take off a month or two or a year mm-hmm. to hang out with my family, to have 2 months of vacation with my family while my kids are still small. She's like, oh, I got to change a lot of things. I've got to embrace online. I've got to embrace these different things. So that's where the lucky thing I'd say for so many of us. There's so many ways to reach people with the internet now.
Right.
And most of it's free. I mean, outside of having a camera, it's free. YouTube is free to put your account up there. It's just amazing how many things. So, well, I'll definitely share everything I've learned with you and everybody else as well, that there's so many opportunities to do these things.
Yeah.
And to like to reach your core audience, to reach, to help more. And that's what I love is you're giving value, and you not only give value, but you're also realizing it's helping these people's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
No. Sorry. I'm just and go.
I was just gonna say I feel really lucky. I mean, it's quite the journey. I've definitely had my ups and downs, but ultimately to be able to be building something that I'm so passionate about and that gives me so much in terms of not only filling my cup and fulfilling, making me feel like on a heart and soul level fulfilled, but also that is constantly challenging me to grow and stretch and become, evolve into a greater version of myself.
Yeah. To reach more people, you have to learn, you have to grow. That's very interesting how you tied in how much the business going through the whole process for the past 18 months, the effects, the challenges that's been. So that's neat. How about you review your core beliefs that drive you?
Well, we talked about, the big one, which is, that we are all worthy exactly as we are. I'm trying to think, the other big ones that I talk about a lot are the ideas of living mindfully and the idea of self-compassion. These are main messages that I talk about all the time. And I want a world in which we know that it's okay to love ourselves first. And I think that's a hard message because we're always told, sacrifice, we got to put others first, so on and so forth, especially for women. But if we can love ourselves and take care of ourselves first, then we will show up so much better for everyone else in our life, for our families, for our work. And we don't have to always be the martyr. We don't always have to put everybody else's needs before our own.
Oh, and I can tell you, since we have kids and I have a wife, she has such a strong drive to sacrifice herself, her time, everything. When you have these kids that say, mom, 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 mom.
Right.
I mean, I have lived that the past, I don't know, once I could talk and walk, 7-6 years,
mm-hmm.
that, especially for moms, I guess this happens, it's kind of probably ingrained once again in you, in your DNA. But literally, then you have kids and you feel like you should do all these things for the kids. And I can tell you as a dad, I don't relate to them. Like, no, they're going to be okay. They'll figure that out themselves. No, you can go get your water. I mean, I'm so much better at doing those things, whereas I can see that I'm sure there's many wives out there and mothers that just – they can't. That kid starts crying or any kid starts crying and boom, they're just – they're focused. They're gonna like, once again, be a martyr and just help out as much as they can.
Right.
Are there any books? Are there any books or anything you'd recommend? And if you don't have them now, you can give me a list and I'll put it in the show notes later.
Yeah. No, I would. I am a huge fan of Brené Brown for all this work that
Spell
we're
that
talking
for me.
About. Brené, B-R-E-N-E, and then Brown like a color. She is a researcher and a professor at the University of Texas in Houston. And she has dedicated her career to studying shame and vulnerability. She's written 3 best-selling books. The Gifts of Imperfection, Daring Greatly, and Rising Strong is her most recent, which I'm reading right now. And, as far as this content that we're talking about right now, that is a big part of her work. And her work also was a big part of giving me the courage to come out and be vulnerable and share my own story. And her messages are constantly things that I share in my coaching.
Great. I'll get those linked in there as well. So 3 best-selling books. So obviously she knows what she's doing and has done it 3 times.
Yeah. She actually came to Denver a few months ago, and I'm really excited to go and see her. But tickets sold out in 10 minutes. for a big, you know,
Oh, wow.
venue, and she's very popular these days.
Well, that just shows not only are you helping people and you know it feels good, and that's where somebody said, if you would do what you're doing and didn't get paid for it, so let's say you had a full-time job, but you would still put in the effort to do this, you know it's something you want to keep doing, and it's worth doing. And then you have her, and you see the success. Unfortunately, people are relating to this, so I guess it's the good and the bad. In the ideal world, you won't be doing any of this, but you realize there's a huge need for that.
Right, right. And all of her work is built on a very detailed, solid research on this is what I found when I studied vulnerability and shame and, you know, the process of failing and coming back up and all of these things. So she knows her stuff because it's based on interviews with thousands and thousands of people.
Nice. It's great that she's doing that work.
Yeah.
Something else you just said made me realize so many of us are held back by the fear of failure or that we failed, whereas I love the framing that as they're experiments.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we're doing, we don't, if we once again judge ourselves, oh, I failed, I'm no good, I'm not a success. We just don't realize that all the success stories you see and hear and read about, they didn't publicize their failures. No one talks about those. They're just, say that's an experiment to myself. I go, I didn't fail, that's just an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully I can hope people will get to the mindset that I'm pretty much at. If you would have asked me a year or 2 years ago what I failed at, I would say nothing, because nothing stands out to me. Like I don't really put a little column and go, and I failed. It literally was, oh, that didn't work that time. But as long as I learned anything from it, I didn't consider it a failure.
Right.
Like,
absolutely.
Nothing. And that's where it's, in this realm, what we're talking about, if you've been trying one diet and you failed, you think you failed, you think you failed. No, it's an experiment in that you need to change it for the next, change something and try again, I would say. Get a coach. Have an accountability partner. Like you said, open up. Try some things like yoga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if we're not failing, then we're not stretching ourselves enough, I would say.
Yeah, you don't have big enough goals or dreams, like you said. Your dreams and goals scare you, which is so great to have them be big enough to do that, to go, wow, can I really do this?
Right.
Let's say it's help 100 girls a year or 100 girls a month or have 1,000 people in your program. I think it's so good to challenge people to go out there, help somebody in some way. Maybe somebody else is passionate in the same arena. They could contact you and say, hey, how could I start this locally? Because as you told me, I forget if we were before the interview or not, you now do a lot of this work via Skype and online, correct?
Right. Yes. So most of my clients are still local, but I have a few that aren't. I have one woman in New Jersey, and I've had one client from Australia even. So, you know, there's no limits to, I can help anybody around the globe.
And that also means you could be sitting in your dream vacation spot helping people.
Right.
And I, just before we wrap up and hear your envision, I can tell people there's nothing that would drag me away that I know of anyway. Maybe there's some strong passion. But I love being able to be home and be around my family and have the free time to go outside and shovel some snow today,
mm-hmm.
to do an interview in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
That, so if people can find their passion and go that way, hopefully they'll end up where you did. And that you've got the support and you're taking the steps and achieving it. You're living the dream you probably didn't believe you could have years ago.
Right. Yeah. And on that same note, though, there's a TED Talk or a Super Soul lesson, actually, from Elizabeth Gilbert. Do you know her?
I don't think so. Let me write it down. Super Soul?
Oprah has this thing called Super Soul Lessons where they're like TED Talks for the soul. And Elizabeth Gilbert.
Okay, and what's it?
Oh, go ahead.
Elizabeth Gilbert, just say the name again for me.
Yeah, Elizabeth Gilbert. She's the author of Eat, Pray, Love. Have you heard of that book?
Oh, yes. Yep.
So she just gave an awesome talk. I just watched it the other day about how she was the biggest proponent ever of follow your passion, follow your passion. She knew she wanted to be a writer from, like, when she was a kid, always sacrificed everything, you know. But now she's finding maybe, you know, some people are like, hey, I don't know what my passion is. So maybe you just follow your curiosity. And see where that leads you.
Yes.
That talk kind of created a shift in my brain because she can say that and I can say that at this point, but I also recognize that plenty of people are like, I don't know what I'm that passionate about. So if they just follow what they're curious about, that's pretty awesome too.
Yeah, and that's, I bet for some people, they have to go deep inside, think back to what they did when they were 10 to 18 years old, and learn how to be curious again. I would challenge to say that so many people watch media and watch shows they're not curious because their brain's not really thinking or exploring or doing anything new. They're not in a practice of looking for new things that are exciting.
Right.
That's where I'm so glad I canceled cable. I would sit there and watch Nuggets games or all the Broncos games or anything that they don't help, even watching this last one. They lost. How many people felt bad after that? At least I had a laptop and I was doing some work.
Mm-hmm.
But literally, yeah, be curious. I love that. Be curious. YouTube has so many videos about so many things. And if something you're interested in or that you do is not there, start recording.
Right.
I'm looking at a tractor in the snow out here that's an old 1940s tractor. There are some terrible videos out there about these tractors. But people watch them and learn about them. I mean, any little niche thing now, it's just amazing. And once again, it's so good to share. It could be sharing these stories like you're sharing. Any challenges you have, you can get support out there,
right,
as well as not only learning and being curious.
Right. I agree.
Hey, it's been great speaking. Let me know if you have any other thoughts, but I'd love to hear, if nothing else, wrapping up with your ultimate vision.
My ultimate vision. Well, I'm trying to think of what else I can say. You mean my ultimate vision for the world or for my business or?
Do them both. And that's where, even though we've said all this, I just love repetition, because saying it again, and like at Toastmasters, you can say it 3 times in 5 minutes so somebody will actually remember it.
Right. like I said earlier, the ultimate vision that drives me is a world in which all women and girls believe that they're worthy exactly as they are. So they're not attaching their self-worth to what they look like, to what they eat, to how smart they are, to how athletic they are, to any outside factors, but they recognize any human being, we are all worthy exactly as we are, no matter, at our greatest moments and at our lowest moments. If we can begin to operate from that place, I think it changes everything. And, when you empower women, you empower the world.
Yeah. They are leaders each and every day. And we learn so much from our mothers. Mothers, sisters, everybody.
Right.
They all have influence. We all have influence. And the healthier everybody is, the healthier an influence, as we mentioned.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I don't mean to leave men behind either. I want men to believe that they're worthy as well.
Oh, true, exactly. But you have a focus.
Right.
It makes sense.
Right.
There is a lady that we read quite a bit as a family here, and she has studied men for decades.
Mm.
But otherwise, it would make sense almost that, I as a man do want to know the woman's perspective of men,
mm-hmm,
and to understand women. So she does that. And I'm blanking on her name, or I would say it. I'll put it in the show notes, and I'll share it with you afterwards in case you haven't read up. I can't believe I'm blanking, but literally. Annette, it's been great. Thank you for the time, and thank you for the work you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's been great. So once again, this was Annette Sloan. She's a mind-body nutrition coach and owner of Wholehearted, which specializes in compassionate health coaching for women and teen girls. And where do you want them to contact you? Phone number, email, website, YouTube channel, Instagram.
Yes. I'm actually in the process of transferring my website right now. So it's currently healthyteengirls.com, because I started with a focus on working with girls. But since I've expanded and worked with women as well, actually today it's in the process of going to AnnetteSloan.com. So by the time you listen to this, both of those domains should be a good place to find me. And also on Facebook at facebook.com/healthyteengirls. I encourage you, if you have any interest in learning more about emotional eating, I have a new free guide on my website called Overcoming Emotional Eating, A Wholehearted Guide for Women and Girls. And it's a legit thing that I worked on for many, many hours, pouring everything I know from 16 years of my personal journey and all of my professional experience as well. So I think it's a really great guide, and I'd recommend hopping on my website to grab it if that's of interest.
That's great. And I'm going to spell Annette Sloan, Sloan. So that's AnnetteSloan.com.
Yes.
And you also said it's healthyteengirls.com.
Yes.
There will be links in the show notes here at yourbusinesspodcast.com as well. Yeah, it sounds great. I'm glad you have information out there for people, and that you, once again, I'm grateful that you are helping these people. You're making ripples in lives for generations to come, and it's just amazing. So thanks for the work.
Oh, thank you, Kent. It's been such fun to talk to you.
Yes, I enjoyed it. Thank you.